Crispin, The Cross of Lead. Chapter 11. Asta Sun, came Eyeclef's voice, in the name of Lord Furnival, you're herewith charged with theft. Give way. I was too stunned to move. The boy's a wolf's head, the steward shouted. Slay him if you can. From either side, men ran forward. I ran the only way open to me, toward the mill. Reaching it, I felt about its outer walls. Finding a grip, I hoisted myself up in hope of escaping by climbing and hiding. But then a great crack exploded a hand's breadth from my head. Twisting around, I saw an arrow embedded in the timbers of the mill. Faint with horror, I loosened my grip and dropped to the ground. For a moment I squatted, trying to regain my breath and wits. Hearing the men draw closer, I leaped up and scrambled around the corner of the mill. Eyeclef urged the men on. Hurry! He went around the mill. Head him off. He mustn't escape. The other side of the mill was completely dark. For all I saw, I might have been blind. Sure enough, the next moment my feet slipped out from under me, and I crashed into water. Gasping for breath, I flailed around until my feet touched bottom. The water was up to my chest. I dropped into the mill race, the ditch where the river water ran to turn the mill's wheels. Knowing I was in no danger of drowning, I paused to catch my breath and listen. In the darkness, I heard the steward continually cry out, while the other men stumbled about trying to find where I was. Deciding to use the mill race as a path, I waded forward against the water flow, knowing it would take me to the river. The farther I went, the more the tumult behind me lessened. Even so, I had little doubt they were still searching. The press of water increased. Stopping, I grasped the edge of the race and hauled myself out, rolled over, and hugged the ground. I could hear the river before me. I crawled forward, making my way down a gentle slope until my hand touched water again. It was the river. Unable to swim, not certain how deep the water was at this spot, I hugged the bank, too timid to pass over. I spied lights upstream. They looked like torch flares. The men were hovering near the fording place, thinking I'd try a crossing there. I had to either cross where I was or go a different way. Afraid of the river, I chose to turn and work my way back to the mill run. I slipped in, waded across, and came up on the other side. Gaining firm ground, I began to run. I went past the cottages and across new plowed fields until I reached the road. Not stopping, I rushed on. In such moonlight as there was, I made my way to the southern end of Stromford and another boundary cross. It was when I knelt down to pray that I saw a form on the ground. It took a moment for me to realize someone was lying there. My first thought was that it was a guard meant to stand against me and that he had fallen asleep. But when the person didn't move, I drew forward, albeit timidly. It was Father Cannell. He lay very still. Father? I called softly. He did not answer. I knelt down, reached out, and touched him gently. Father? I said a second time. He still did not move. I peered closer only to see that his throat had been slit, his blood made black by night, lay pooled upon the ground. Stifling a shriek, I knelt down, my whole body shaking. Terrified, I made a short and desperate prayer to St. Giles, imploring his blessings on the priest and on myself. That done, I ran away. God, I was certain, had completely abandoned me. I wonder why they killed him. Chapter 12. Sometimes I ran. Sometimes all I could do was walk. All I knew was that if the steward overtook me and he with horse, I'd not survive for long. With every step I took and with every look back, I shed tears of grief. The death of Father Quinnell had to do with my mother and me. I didn't doubt. I wondered if it was because the priest was helping me, or that it was because he was about to tell me about my father, or something more about my mother. I forced myself along, keeping to the road, though to speak of the muddy path I took as a road was a gross exaggeration. Though uneven, as well as muddy, and barely half a rod across, it's what I followed. I had gone for but a short time when I realized I'd lost the sack of food Goodwife Peregrine had given me. I halted, even considered going back to find it, but knew that would be folly. I'd have to forage as I went. I did touch around my neck. The little pouch that had the old hag had given me was the cross of lead. Remained. Grateful to have that, at least, I pushed on. At first the road took me by open areas, but soon it led me into a forest of densely twisted trees that allowed neither moon nor starlight to seep through. After going a little more, I halted, too exhausted to go on. I sank down, back propped against a tree. Though worn out from my flight, my close escape, not to mention my churning emotions, I could not rest. I kept thinking of all that had happened, trying to make sense of what had occurred, of how I had become a wolf's head. As for what would happen, I could see little but an early death in an unmarked grave. If I were lucky to have even that. What's more, I knew that if I died alone, without the benefit of sacred rites, I'd plunge straight to hell, and my torments would go on forever. Unable to sleep, I sat midst the swarming darkness, starting at every random rustling and cracking that came to ear. Then the wind began to moan, causing branches to stir and trees to creak and knock one upon one another. These sounds were lanced by the hooting of the devil's own bird, an owl. Far worse were the sudden silences that suggested something lurking near. At length, I flung myself upon my knees and prayed long and hard to our Savior Jesus, to his sainted Mother Mary, and most of all, to my blessed Saint Giles for mercy, guidance, comfort, and protection. This putting myself in God's merciful hands brought me a little relief. Enough to allow me to fall into an irregular sleep, unsure what the next day would bring.